You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Let's go to some of the news of the day. Police searching for leads. 23-year-old pregnant Amish woman was killed in Pennsylvania. Odd to say the least. Let's pick up the story with GMA.
Amish woman in Pennsylvania. Officials say she was 6 months pregnant. They suspect she was murdered. Stephanie Ramos is on the scene in Amish country. Good morning, Stephanie.
George, good morning. The road to my left here in Spartansburg, Pennsylvania, usually doesn't see much vehicle traffic, mostly horse and buggy. But recently, state police cars lined this road after a pregnant Amish woman was found dead inside a home.
This morning, investigators descending upon this quiet road in rural Pennsylvania, desperately searching for clues surrounding the murder of a pregnant Amish woman, Rebecca Byler.
The death is currently being investigated as a criminal homicide. We are aggressively investigating all available leads.
Police finding the 23-year-old inside her house Monday afternoon, calling the circumstances of her death suspicious. ABC affiliate WJET reporting that the victim was 6 months pregnant and that her two young children were home when the body was discovered. They say her husband was reportedly not home during the time of the murder.
I'm just absolutely heartbroken that this has happened. I'm very concerned about the Amish community and worried for them.
We want to solve this just like the community wants us to solve it. So any information that's out there, we want people to come forward and help us resolve this issue.
According to WJET, family members say they saw a red Jeep in the driveway around 10 a.m. the day Byler was killed, and that the Jeep was also seen driving up and down the road. Neighbors now left in shock as police have not yet identified any suspects.
Everybody's just stunned. Nobody could even imagine that this kind of stuff is going on.
State police says they are trying to answer so many questions. They are asking people in this area if they saw anyone suspicious in this area to call police. Guys.
Yeah. You know, it is such like an odd way of life that they are, involved in. It was Kingpin, which is a very underrated film with the Farrelly brothers. Highly recommend it. Stars Woody Harrelson, Bill Murray, but he's a fantastic bowler, and he's from Amish country. Now, in the meantime, the Michigan primary, Biden won, but how about 100,000 voters said uncommitted? Let's go to the latest.
100,000 voters casting ballots for uncommitted. On the Republican side, it was another easy win for Donald Trump, topping Nikki Haley by more than 40 points. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez is in Detroit. He's covering it all for us. Hey, Gabe, good morning.
Hey there, Hoda. Good morning. Michigan, of course, is expected to be one of the closest swing states this November. And now, as you mentioned, a group protesting President Biden and the war in Gaza managed to get more than 100,000 votes.
This morning, President Biden and former President Trump coming off huge wins in Michigan.
We demand a permanent ceasefire now.
But it's these voters who shook up the Democratic primary.
If he doesn't get it together and change what he's doing, we will not vote for him in November.
Overnight, an extremely unusual watch party for voters who cast their ballots not for a candidate, but for uncommitted. In protest of President Biden's handling of the Israel-Hamas war.
I didn't feel good about voting for Joe Biden. He's been pretty complicit about the genocide happening in Palestine.
The effort's organizers had set their goal at 10,000 votes. They got more than 10 times that.
You voted for President Biden in 2020, so you think in November you might vote for former President Trump?
Correct.
Here in Dearborn, Arab Americans make up a majority of the population. Longtime Democrat Ramzi Kassam told me he was furious with the Biden administration over the death toll in Gaza.
I think it's a great idea to vote uncommitted to send that message.
The Biden campaign points out, overall, uncommitted only got 13% of the vote, about the same percentage as some previous primaries. Still, Donald Trump only beat Hillary Clinton in 2016 by 10,000 votes in Michigan. President Biden won the crucial swing state in 2020 by about 150,000. So any protest votes could be critical come November. On the Republican side of the race, Mr. Trump has now swept the first five contests and called to thank Michigan supporters overnight.
I'm so proud of the results because they're far greater than anticipated.
But his rival, Nikki Haley, says under the former president, Republicans have actually lost ground as she moves on to Super Tuesday states, insisting she's not dropping out.
And if states like Colorado and Michigan and Minnesota want to start winning again, you have to have somebody on the ticket that can win a general election.
And back here in Battleground, Michigan, the uncommitted vote clearly shows that the Biden campaign faces several challenges with Arab American and young voters. But the campaign plans to ramp up its messaging in the coming months on abortion rights. Hoda? Well,
I know the Biden administration is responding to that 100,000 uncommitted vote. What are they saying?
Well, Hoda, initially, the statement put out by the president made no mention of the uncommitted vote. But overnight, a senior campaign advisor says that the president shares the goal of many of those who voted uncommitted, which is an end to the violence. Still, President Biden has only sent top aides here to Michigan to meet with Arab American voters. He hasn't come himself to meet with them in person. And based on this vote, that could change, Hoda.
He can't win. They can put him forward. He's not going to win. I would never vote for him and Harris. Not happening. I noticed that the people that are very vocal, this is something that I've noticed. People are very vocal against President Trump. They don't defend Biden. All they want to do is attack President Trump. And they try to they try not to defend Biden, so to speak, but they kind of dance around it a little bit to me. And what I mean by that is they talk about the economy, they talk about democracies on the ballot, they're trying to drag abortion rights into it, blah blah blah, but they don't defend Biden Harris. They try to defend everything other than that. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. A great meal, a great time is waiting for you at the Cohasset Inn. Rhode Island tradition since 1977, 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick. They have a large dining room, perfect, maybe a group, maybe a collation, lunch. The Cohasset Inn, getting a big group together or maybe just you alone or a date. 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick, great staff, terrific food. They're always working on the menu. And they also have a nice lounge as well. You have the market at Cohasset right there. They're open 7 days a week. I'll see you for a great meal. Make it the Cohasset Inn. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Providence Journal has the story. And that is that Governor McKee, now they're requesting more time to hand over documents to the feds. So right now, apparently, the feds are giving the Rhode Island DOT and the McKee administration more time to produce Washington Bridge records. Story by Patrick Anderson, giving them a little extra time. They had last month set a deadline that it was supposed to be, I believe, this week, actually, on Monday. But instead, they verbally have agreed to extend it, and now all of this is leading up till March 18th. And what this has to do with, they're investigating false claims made to receive payment for construction, repair, inspection on the West Brown Bridge. And that continues to obviously be a disaster and nightmare. Now, we also have the Johnston Sunrise. You know, they have been doing an excellent job, and they're really the ones that set things in motion regarding the situation with Attorney General Peter Noronha going on the record regarding this situation with ICE. Now, they have a new update now. In a stinging rebuke of state officials by an enforcement wing of the federal government, it was actually, and that is with ICE, where they released and they're going after the McKee administration for releasing someone undocumented, child molestation felony charges. And they write, was this a matter of policy or terrible error? Well, ICE has responded saying they're not sorry and they stand by their initial criticism that sparked and ignited the whole story. So now, Governor McKee this week still has not responded. Actually, he hasn't exactly been available. So we'll see at some point someone can get a microphone in front of him. He also said he was having the state police investigate this. So, but let's go to the Johnston Sunrise story. McKee office provided Rhode Island Division of Sheriff's incident report last April 2023. And they say they received a phone call saying that the immigrant illegal from Guatemala child molester had posted $50,000 bail. But ICE had a detainer lodged at the prison. So this seems to be semantics where they're saying, well, he's at the courthouse. If they had just sent him back to the prison, then ICE had a detainer there. So the McKee people are playing it fast and loose, saying, oh, they only had it at the prison. They didn't have it at the courthouse. Well, that's because the McKee people did not inform ICE that he was about to, you know, he was making bail and then was still, in fact, at the courthouse. So that's what it seems to come down to. Now, the McKee people, Governor McGreed, his people say, oh, our hands were tied. We weren't ignoring the detainer. The detainer pertained to the ACI. He was at the courthouse at the time. Well, it's the same thing. The sheriff's report to Governor McKee. Folks, with all of this, I want to come back to the background is February 6th, there's an arrest of a Guatemalan national charge, sexual assault to Rhode Island. Now, that was just this month. February 15th, they call out the ACI, where they say he'd been detained and said they ignored the detainer, meaning the ACI. ICE is making these accusations, and they released him. So the warden at the ACI referred request to comment to Chief Information Officer PR at the prison, who provided an official statement on Monday, February 19th, and says the inmate was discharged from the court, not from the ACI. Later that day, the ACI confirmed they still follow the 2014 Chafee policy, which says to ignore the ICE detainee. That's the bottom line. So the McKee people trying to say, oh, he was released because he was at the courthouse. No. Even if he had been released back to the prison, they still ignore the ICE orders. So here it is. Governor McKee still has not answered the question regarding, is he following the 2014 Chafee? Now, Governor Chafee executive order saying from going forward, we're not going to follow direction from ICE. Now, the case is next scheduled pre-trial conference on March 13th. Now, Attorney General Peter Nerona, his office revealed they had argued the case to try to keep him in custody. But it came down to Governor McKee was insisting this guy get released. And then there's been a little bit of a war of words. But this is, I think, the best way to sum this up. Now, in the Sunrise story, they asked the question, is Rhode Island a sanctuary state? ACLU, Stephen Brown, who helped to persuade Governor Chafee to issue the 2014 directive, which basically moved Rhode Island into sanctuary state, said, we agree with the governor and that the criticism aimed at his office by ICE Attorney General is unwarranted. Now, again, what do you expect the ACLU to do? Meaning, what do you expect them to say is what I meant to say. It's worth emphasizing that this is an incident that took place and they were concerned he was a flight risk, but the judge was proven right. That's not the point. That is absolutely not the point. And Governor McKee needs to realize what side he's on, which is he's with the ACLU. And the ACLU was with Governor Chafee saying, ignore ICE and don't detain these people, even though they put a federal detainer on him. And instead, just release them. Don't keep them in custody. And it was also last week that both House Minority Leader Mike Chippendale and Senate Minority Leader Jessica De La Cruz issued a joint statement, said Governor McKee needs to reveal his plan should a large group of illegals arrive at our doorstep. And what about the fact Rhode Island status as a sanctuary state? And it is a sanctuary state. So now the article also has the mayor of Johnston, Mayor Joseph Polisena Jr. He basically said McKee is trying to deflect blame, times of crisis. All he does is try to deflect blame, whether it's the Washington Bridge. There's a quote now. The insane Pawtucket Soccer Stadium deal. This lapse with the illegal. Governor McKee should channel his efforts into implementing strategic measures. Polisena called McKee the Bailey Zappi of governors. More third-string quarterback than team coach. Wow. Boom. Mic drop. Again, you can read the story in the Johnston Sunrise. Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show. AEP Services. They take great pride installing fences of all kinds. Vinyl, wood, aluminum, chain link. Experience, quality, integrity. Call AEP Services today for a quality fence, home or business. 401-228-7190. 401-228-7190. Residential fence, commercial fence, steel, wood guard, rail. They have it all. Beautiful aluminum product, decorative. Landscape, it adds a lot to it for your stunning property. Call the experts today, AEP Services, 401-228-7190. Residential or commercial, why not enjoy your backyard, a little privacy, or maybe keep a pet or young children inside? Remember, they also have fences. They're resilient, water-resistant. Call today, 401-228-7190. Free quote. AEP Services, the fence experts, 401-228-7190. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Well, I can tell you in Georgia, the topic of illegal immigration remains very, very strong. Now, where we are, our part of the world, both Massachusetts Governor, Governor Healey, continues to allow Massachusetts to basically operate a sanctuary state. Certainly Governor McKee won't admit it, but he does the same. But I can tell you that certainly things are still just absolutely, people are just so angry what happened with the death of Lakin Riley, the nursing student at a nearby school. I want to pick up the latest with World News Tonight.
The case of the nursing student killed while running on the University of Georgia campus, how the suspect allegedly tried to conceal her death amid major questions now about why he was in this country. Steve Osunsami in Georgia again tonight.
In arrest records, prosecutors say that this 26-year-old from Venezuela accused of murder on the University of Georgia campus did conceal the death of 22-year-old Lakin Riley by dragging the victim to a secluded area. Riley was a cross-country runner at her old high school in the Atlanta suburbs and was a nursing student at a school near UGA when she was out running near this lake and was killed. Jose Ibarra is in a Georgia jail charged with murder tonight, and his story is adding fuel to the fire over immigration.
Mr. Ibarra has been charged with malice murder, felony murder, aggravated battery.
It's now a year and a half after authorities first arrested him for crossing the southern U.S. border unlawfully. And in that same time, federal officials say he was also arrested in New York City for a motor vehicle license violation, acting in a manner to injure a child less than 17. He was released each time. He and his brother were living in an apartment building near jogging trails where Riley was killed. Prosecutors say Ibarra prevented her from making a 911 call and used an object to kill her.
This was a crime of opportunity where he saw an individual and bad things happen.
Unrelated to the murder, the suspect's brother was also arrested for having a fake green card. And the university is announcing more than $7 million in security upgrades, including better lighting and more cameras. David, Steve.
You know, this is, now granted, that happened and they're dealing with it. You think just how ferocious that is. She went out for a run and then this sex-crazed murderer sees her and attacks her. I just want to play the beginning again where they talk about then trying to conceal her death. She was trying to call 911.
Prosecutors say that this 26-year-old from Venezuela accused of murder on the University of Georgia campus did conceal the death of 22-year-old Lakin Riley by dragging the victim to a secluded area. Riley was a cross-country runner at her old high school in the Atlanta suburbs and was a nursing student at a school near UGA when she was out running near this lake and was killed. Jose Ibarra is in a Georgia jail charged with murder tonight, and his story is adding fuel to the fire.
You know, what an absolute disgrace. Plus, she was trying to call 911, and then he just murdered her. I mean, it's just so... But folks, close at home, people like Governor McKee and Matos, they're not doing anything to try to keep you safe or keep us safe. And then I watched some of that hearing, the embarrassing Fannie Willis. That woman has no business at all in Atlanta trying to go after President Trump. I want to dip into this. The key witness.
DA Fannie Willis fights to stay on this case against Donald Trump in Georgia. Here's Aaron Kutursky.
What an embarrassment.
For more than 2 hours today, attorneys for Donald Trump and his co-defendants in Georgia tried to prove District Attorney Fannie Willis lied about her romance with the man she hired to run the case, grilling a key witness, the former law partner of Special Prosecutor Nathan Wade, about the timing of the relationship. But Terrence Bradley testified repeatedly he did not know.
When did the relationship start?
I cannot answer that. I don't know when the relationship started.
At that point, had they begun their romantic relationship?
I don't recall any specific dates.
Bradley was confronted with his own text messages saying the romance started before Willis hired Wade.
And when I asked you if you thought it started before she hired him, and you responded, absolutely.
But today, Bradley said in those texts, he was only speculating.
Why would you speculate when she was asking you a direct question about when the relationship started?
I have no answer for that.
Except for the fact that you do, in fact, know when it started, and you don't want to testify to that in court.
No, I have no direct knowledge of when the relationship started.
Bradley's inconsistent account raises questions, since Willis and Wade testified their romance began after he started working on the Trump case.
In November of 2021, I hired him. I do not consider our relationship to have become romantic until early of 2022.
The timing of the relationship is critical. To get Fannie Willis kicked off the case, the defense would have to prove she profited by hiring Wade. David, the judge is going to hear final arguments about all this on Friday. David.
She absolutely should be kicked off. These people are an embarrassment. I think she will be kicked off. She has no credibility left in this. To watch and follow any of this is so unseemly. I think she's going to get kicked off. That postpones any type of trial. This woman has absolutely no business being in that position of power. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvement. Call them today for a free quote. You can also find them on Facebook, 401-323-9252. 323-9252, AJ, drywall, plasters, home improvement, frame to finish basements. What a difference it'll make in your basement. Acoustic ceilings. Look how beautiful your ceiling could be. New homes, additions. Also, commercial rehabs, painting, remodeling. Contact them today. It's a family-run business. AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvements. Call for a free quote. What a difference they'll make in your home, your ceilings, floors, basements. 401-323-9252. What a difference. Beautiful walls and ceilings. 401-323-9252. You can also find them on Facebook. It's AJ Drywall, Plaster, and Home Improvements for your home or business. Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show weekdays. We start at 11. We go until 2. It's AM 1380. 99.9 FM. You can always listen online at our website, which happens to be DePietro.com. Folks, it's time for Four Stories with Donna Perry. Joining us right now happens to be one of my siblings, independent columnist, opinion maker,
It is Donna Perry. And DJ, let's start off with this interesting situation with the Crimson and at Harvard. Congress could be wrong. That doesn't mean Harvard is right. Let's dive into the continued fallout here.
Great, and great to be with you, John. Yeah, Harvard's problem with anti-Semitism and all these incidents, which began in the fall, obviously, on campus, it's definitely not going away. A couple of things have kind of popped up. You know, it took a little bit of time, a little downtime, or we're not been in the news for a little while. So, but now what has emerged is a couple of things. In reaction to all that, we had... They toppled Claudine Gay, which was certainly in order. She, you know, left, resigned, and whatever they want to call it. In the mid, so following that, John, they did create what they're saying is a task force on anti-Semitism and try to address it. But you, yep. it also needs to be pointed out, you know, continuing to almost not recognize the problem, they also quickly set up an equal task force against, like, Muslim, you know, against Arab, you know, and Muslim
bias,
hate, excuse me, and stuff like that. So they have all that. So it's sort of like they don't want to really own it in a way. So they have that going on. Well, in the middle of the past few days, the co-chair of the new anti-Semitism task force has resigned, and she is saying through what she is learning that the university would, quote, not really act on or accept our recommendations. So that doesn't really sound, John, like, number one, they're running this thing in good faith. And the Harvard Crimson, which is, it is the campus paper, but to be fair, they're, you know, they try to do journalism, you know, really well known, and they're not just like a student paper. So they're coming, they're reporting on that. And also, they have an editorial where they are pointing out that it was really unprecedented that you have a major congressional, the Committee on Education, they have subpoenaed communications, which also really obviously means emails, JD, from the university in the time when this was really at a high pitch, and you have to go back to the fall. And apparently the Crimson is reporting the school has no intention to comply with those, you know, types of subpoenas. They obviously can easily have an army of lawyers, and they're going to fight it and the stonewalling, and that's what they're implying. So it just seems that if you don't want to reveal communications, what the paper is questioning is what do they need to hide? What were they trying to hide? And they don't want to reveal. It would probably be a trove of emails. So I would just say, you know, Harvard, John, to make it simple, like it seems like kind of not getting the message. You know, like a lot of this was set up to say to the university, no, you do have a problem with anti-Semitism. Yeah. And it was blatant. It was for everyone to see. And there was the Stormy hearing, you know, in Congress, which really sealed the deal. I think, you know, we all can agree on Claudine Gay. So that's where that stands. And I don't believe a university can simply just stonewall the Congress. And I would add, John, whether it's Harvard or any of these other big Ivy League schools, what sometimes people probably don't realize, but those schools, no matter having you know, high tuitions and endowments and all this stuff, John, they really do receive a lot of funding from the federal government.
That's right.
And they're allowed to do that, right? And that's how they, you know, have all this matching funding and everything else. So, you know, I think the Harvard Crimson is implying that that would definitely be in jeopardy if they think they're going to just, you know, stonewall. I think this is not the last you're going to hear about this face-off with Congress, with Harvard.
You know what's also interesting, Donna Perry, is it, to me it seems like that the people that selected Claudine Gay, that it's as if they just liked her brand of what they just wanted to say, this is the president of Harvard. And they, because it's clear that they certainly didn't vet her, maybe they would another candidate. It is embarrassing the way she had to step down, but I think this starts to, and get your thought, come into play when it's almost a form of identity politics. They like the idea of this is who we want to be the face that she's the president of Harvard.
Oh, absolutely, John. And by the way, what will absolutely on that, also what would be showing through emails, she famously did not really lift a finger.
That's right.
When it wasn't just, oh, we feel kind of unsafe. I mean, there was really physical abuse.
Yes.
Jewish students were saying, I am afraid to leave my room.
Yeah.
So, and we, you know, anyone following the news remembers it took her a very long while to actually say anything was wrong. And they did allow the pro-Palestinian movement. That's what it was. They allowed those students to have the upper hand, and Jewish students were kind of cowering at that time. That is really how it played out. And so I think this idea that they now do not want chains of emails released to the Congress, we'll see. That is not, you know, that's the U.S. Congress. And when they subpoena, they can withhold funds. So we'll see how this plays out. But I think it wasn't just her. You have an administration. And remember, John, when she was essentially, you know, looked like she was about to get dethroned, there was a lot of professors that stood by her side. So it's not just her. It's an entire, as you're right, there's a whole culture there that has gone that route. You know, they were like pro-Palestinian, but it's one thing to have that opinion. It's another thing to allow the students to almost be like wildly, you know, racing around the campus and like really harassing and bullying all those other students. So that's where that's
Curry, another story in Massachusetts. Governor Maura Healey now says the new overflow shelter for migrants is going to be Fox Point. I obviously want to hear your thought, but I think, you know, the governor, she really should take a hard look at what just happened on the University of Georgia campus. When you have people that should not be here, that guy shouldn't have been here. That was a young, beautiful 22-year-old nursing student who was murdered out for a midday jog, 12:30 in the afternoon, and then killed like that. The uproar that is there, I think a lot of these politicians, and they happen to be Democrats, but you know, you could seal your own fate. If you want to continue to go, you are really, you know, kind of throwing caution to the wind to allow these sanctuaries to be set up. Because bottom line is, Governor Healey, as much as they think we have to help these people, they truly don't know who these people are that they're letting in.
No, you're right, John. And again, you're right. Like, this would be in Fort Point. Is by the way, it's not even a neighborhood. It's like a commerce center.
Yeah.
It is really a jewel for Boston. It's become one of the hottest tourism sites. And oh, there's a lot of pushback. Both her and Michelle Wu, like John, the fact that this is now getting delayed and they just don't want that headline yet. I think that there is, and there should be, significant pushback. The problem for Massachusetts, is only going to keep growing too, because it seems like the problem with the whole migrant, you know, situation, the more a state accommodates, John, the more migrants are going to come.
100%.
You know, they're looking for places to land. That is not a place for them to land.
No, you're a magnet.
And I do want to make one comment, if I can, about the, you know, the University of Georgia. Like, this killing, and this is a little bit bubbling up in some of the reporting, and nobody wants to say this. There is a culture clash, because there's not supposed to be that anymore. John, there's a culture clash when you have young males from certain Latin American countries, and you have westernized American females who... And people are starting to talk about this. Yes, they go out in jogging clothes and exercise clothes. And no one here is not used to that. And no one looks at that. So I think, though, the problem, and it's a very dangerous, you know, clash, because you do have young males from certain cultures there. John, they would not be used to that. They don't grow up with that.
Yeah.
They are in more conservative cultures, and then they're here and they're meeting westernized, Americanized young women, live independently. They jog. She tackled they're out her. At night.
You know, oh, she was trying to defend herself. She fought back. I'm sure she hit him or punched him and he killed her.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, that's the type of individual. And then it's a huge story, obviously, in the state of Georgia. I think it could end up being a Willie Horton type effect on the campaign. Folks, quick break. Much more ahead. Donna Perry right here on the John DePietro Show.
All your oil needs, make it Henry Oil. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Reliable, affordable fuel oil delivery. Call Henry Oil today. Fuel oil, diesel, gasoline delivery. It's Henry Oil, residential, commercial fuel oil delivery since 1947. They also have budget plans, service contracts, lock and cap pricing. You can depend on Henry Oil. Call them today, 401-521-0200. Serving most of Rhode Island and southeastern Mass. We got a long way to go with winter. Make sure that tank is filled. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Henry Oil, a local family-run business since 1947 that you can depend on. For all your oil needs, call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200.
Speaking with independent columnist, opinion maker, it's Donna Perry. Well, DJ, he's 4-0, the big guy, President Trump now. New Hampshire, Iowa. Yeah. Nevada, South Carolina, the media, as much as everyone keeps taking swings, Nikki Haley is the last one standing. I think some of the money is going to start to dry up. It does. I think it has surprised everyone, but he is the champ. He continues to win. And just want to get your thoughts on as President Trump just continues to move closer to the nomination.
Yeah, I mean, You have to say, talk about rise from the dead and go.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't think there's now no question that he's essentially going to, you know, shore up and really wrap up the delegate count. They feel like certainly this is going to happen in March. Super Tuesday's around the corner, March 5th. And you do see that with Haley, John, I think the problem is she is at a stone brick wall at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, I think to just continue to think your argument is he can't win against Biden. It's hard to continue to make that sounds almost silly at this point when he's racking up wins and he's winning in huge margins. I will say it was remarkable. There's no other way to say it to see, you know, against her, a former two-term governor of her own state. And she loses like 2-1. It wasn't even like he was, stumbled over the finish line, John, with like one county he managed to get ahead. So, you know, people did say, oh, South Carolina is Trump country, but hey, she's a Republican and she had been the governor. So there's a lot, something else really at work here. The only thing I would note, and I do think you're going to start seeing, I would say there's going to be trouble in the water between him and the larger Republican Party. And people might think, no, he's got the whole thing wrapped up. Everyone who's a Republican is with Trump. That's not actually true. And there's a big country and not every state has voted. Now, you know, despite her side saying that, it's kind of not going to matter. He's about to wrap it up from that perspective. But we did just note there is some, I would say there's caution lights about the next step. And that is him now has figured out a lot of stuff that they did not know, you know, 4 or 8 years ago.
He's run a good campaign.
Yeah.
They're tight, no leaks. The problems he seems to run into is when he goes off script, like he did with the black audience, and he starts saying, and they all wear my mugshot. Other than that, he's run a very disciplined campaign. Donna Perry, would you also say that, and I think it's interesting, but if the election is about on a referendum on Biden, it would seem that Trump wins. If this is a referendum on Trump, then Biden wins. But I just don't see any evidence. As much as the media and the Democrats are trying, to me, this will be, the election will be a referendum on the current occupant of the White House.
I would agree. And yeah. I think he, despite, you know, again, as you say, that, you know, the media is almost kind of getting hysterical with itself about what they know, what they're witnessing, right? Biden, John, is in far weaker shape. And I don't just mean that physically. The polls are the polls. And yeah, they go up and they go down. But he is not really appearing that he's going to be able to put up much of a match. And I would say that a more seasoned Washington savvy Trump and a Washington savvy Trump and his campaign, to be fair to them, John, they went in. They didn't know really know much of how everything operates.
Correct.
I would say he should be much more feared now. I mean, they know what they're doing. And I want to just mention, and that is what is going on over the RNC. And that whole side of things is where I would look for some pushback, which has a little bit begun. They mentioned Henry Barber, who's the son of the well-known legendary Haley Barber, who was a big, you know, very powerful chair and got a lot of people elected in his time. That's the one thing I'm going to say, though, JD, that we will see how this begins to play out, because I think, go ahead.
Was going to say, I also think, though, you know, for years now, we've been hearing it's an open border. There's a problem at the border. Harris wouldn't do anything about it. I think when you have a very high profile murder, which we just saw take place in Georgia, and then, you know, the governor of Texas putting them on the buses, putting them in New York. We know New York is the media capital, whether it's ABC, NBC, New York Times, Wall Street Journal. No one can ignore all of these well over 100,000 people now in the city. The mayor of New York saying it's unsustainable. I just think it is all kind of come together. That is an issue he's very strong on. And as much as Biden now is trying to run to get a deal, I think it's a day late, dollar short. And as we have talked about, Donna Perry, the issue, it's not, you know, the economy's not great, but it's not that. It's you look and there is a faltering older man, and he's just not up to the job. And he may be stubborn, and they feel they can get him over the finish line, but no one else seems to believe that. I'll give you the final word.
Right. And I would also say the Maura Healey's are going to find out, even in very liberal Massachusetts, there's also a great sense of unfairness about the migrants being given prepaid debit cards. Oh, let us help you into the school. The whole thing, John. And I think that resentment by the public could end up being Trump's biggest winning card, because and that the Democrats just have ignored it, and now is now. So I would agree. I think the migrant crime and the resentment is where Trump is really shoring it up. By the way, across many demographics.
Yes.
So we shall see.
Folks, again, she is independent columnist, opinion maker. It's Donna Perry. DJ, great job as always, and we'll talk to you again.
Great to be with you.
When it comes to insurance, you need a neighbor, a partner, and friend. You need Choppa Insurance Agency. They're located right on Reservoir Avenue in Cranston. Call today, free consultation, 401-900-INSU, 401-900-4678, Choppa Insurance, SIA. Steven, very experienced, whether it's auto, home, renters, business insurance, flood, recreational, umbrella, any other protection for your assets, Rhode Island and Massachusetts, Choppa Insurance Agency, your agency of choice. Call today, set up a meeting. They're so knowledgeable, can have everything under one roof. Call Choppa Insurance today, 401-900-INSU or 401-900-4678. Look for them on Facebook, again, located Reservoir Avenue in Cranston. Choppa Insurance Agency, your neighbor, your partner, your friend. One-stop insurance solutions. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Let's go with some sound, recent sound, starting with, this is a good piece on 60 Minutes, talking about China. And they had Ambassador Nicholas Burns saying it's a battle right now, America's democratic society and China's communist state. And he paints a pretty frightening picture of just how powerful China is right now. I want you to listen to this.
The Cold War ended. We all thought our system had won.
Yeah.
You know, their system failed. Our system rose up. Now he's come back and said, no, no, the communist system's the right way. I guess we didn't bury that after all.
You know, it's interesting to compare the old Cold War with this time. What distinguishes this time versus the old Cold War, Soviet Union had a strong military and nuclear weapons. It had a very weak economy, which in no way competed with ours. China's economy is very strong. We're dealing with an adversary, a competitor in China, stronger than the Soviet Union was in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s.
So if that was a Cold War, what are you calling this?
It's a competition of ideas, a battle of ideas. Our idea, America's big idea of a democratic society and human freedom versus China's idea that a communist state is stronger than a democracy. We don't believe that. So there's a battle here as to whose ideas should lead the world. And we believe those are American ideas.
You know, I think that I think I fully recognize why the Republicans and Team Trump are, I get that, going after Biden and the Biden administration, and with very good reason, as a matter of fact. However, the more we step back, there should, in fact, I believe, be more of a focus, and we have to do something about China. What an adversary they are to us. And by the way, I want to give credit to, it was really President Trump that, it was President Trump that really drew people's attention and really was also, I believe, one of the first leaders in talking about, you know, although we have to, and I think it's an interesting dynamic, manage competition from China, but also keep the peace with China, right? I mean, no one certainly don't want to go to war with them. But right now, that relationship, it's a very important relationship. And I think that's an interesting dynamic that I haven't heard a lot of people talk about, because it is true, there was such a focus during the Cold War. And here you have a country that actually, as you know, as they lay out, has a much stronger economy than the Soviet Union did at that time. So this is something I believe, how we're going to deal with China, I believe that should be more in the forefront. Now, there's a tremendous number of Chinese military-age men that have been making their way into our country because of Biden and the open border. And that is something that, you know, absolutely should not be happening. I want to go back to the 60-minute piece. I thought it was really excellent. Listen to a little bit more of this.
Why is that, and how much of a problem is that for them?
That's a real problem for this economy. They have 1.4 billion people here. They've got to keep it growing, and foreign capital is important. You ask why. I think there's been a contradiction in the messaging from the government here in China.
What they're talking about is money leaving China
to the rest of the world. On the one hand, they say, we're open for business. We want American, Japanese businesses here. But on the other hand, they've raided 6 or 7 American businesses since last March.
Raided?
Raided. They've gone into American companies and shut them down and made accusations we believe are very much unwarranted.
The American companies include Bain & Company and
the Mintz Group, a company that does due diligence for other companies that might want to invest here, was raided last year. Five of its Chinese employees were taken into custody, and they're still there. Another firm, Cap Vision, was raided. Lest the message wasn't loud and clear, a report about it was put on state-run television.
It accused Western consulting firms of espionage and stealing national security and military secrets.
They want the investment to come back, and they're raiding American companies.
Yes.
And they're...
They've passed an amendment to their counter-espionage law, and it's written in such a general way that it could be that American business people could be accused of espionage for engaging in practices that are perfectly legal and acceptable everywhere else in the world, collecting data to do due diligence so that you can decide whether you want to invest in a company or form a joint venture, right?
What do you think the Chinese are afraid that these companies are going to find out, these due diligence companies? What are they worrying about?
You know, I think they want to control data about the Chinese people, about Chinese companies. And so that, I think, is at the heart of the problem with those American companies operating in that sphere.
Ambassador Burns told us that's just one of the concerns he hears about.
There is still intellectual property theft from American companies here.
Is every American company afraid of that?
Yes.
All kinds of U.S. companies began flocking to China in the early 1980s after the country opened to the West under then-leader Deng Xiaoping. And now U.S. banks operate here. Walmart has more than 300 stores across the country. Shoppers here in Shanghai can buy Levi's, browse in an Apple store, and get a caramel frappuccino.
Starbucks has 6,000 stores in China, 1,000 stores in Shanghai, and they want to keep building because coffee, this was a tea culture. For hundreds of years, it's now becoming, at least with the young Chinese, a coffee culture.
And they love Starbucks?
They love Starbucks, and I'll buy you a cappuccino.
I'll take one. Thank you.
Boeing's here. So is Tesla, Pfizer, Chevron, Intel. But while some businesses are thriving, many of the foreign companies are worried about the business climate under President Xi Jinping.
If you track China from the death of Mao to the opening of China to the world, we've seen a closing of sorts. We've seen a centralization of power of the party. We've seen increased repression of the people of China here. That's a very significant trend just over the last decade.
You know, they continue to just be a major threat. Again, it was a very good piece by Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. A great meal, a great time is waiting for you at the Cohasset Inn. Rhode Island tradition since 1977, 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick. They have a large dining room, perfect. Maybe a group, maybe a collation, lunch. The Cohasset Inn, getting a big group together, or maybe just you alone, or a date. 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick. Great staff, terrific food. They're always working on the menu. And they also have a nice lounge as well. You have the market at Cohasset right there. They're open 7 days a week. I'll see you for a great meal. Make it the Cohasset Inn. Check out DePietro.com, DePietro.com, all our links to social media, exclusive stories and videos waiting for you at DePietro.com.